Ladies' Day in the Bunker. How about that? She-Wolf Day in the Bunker. And that was, what was it? I forget. That was the Eagles with one of their great songs by request from one of our subscribers, one of our radio show people. And this is the February the 27th, 2015. Freya's Day, right here in the bunker, right here in north central Indiana. Another bright sunny day, but was zero when I got out of bed this morning. That was not too encouraging. Didn't make me feel like jumping up there and going outside and doing a bunch of work. The only living creature that loves it is my Siberian Husky. She goes in the backyard in 2 foot of snow and lays there most of the day. Unless she sees a critter, and then she'll chase him a mile. But she never worries about the cold. She got plenty of fur. That's right. She looks like one of those sled dogs you see in films and documentaries. They are not great big, but they've got a lot of stamina, and they're strong as hell. Yep. But like I told you the other day, I saw three big fat robins there the other day, and I'm convinced that's the sign that spring is on the way. I've never seen robins come back because they go away in the winter. I've never seen them come back when it was going to be a hell of a lot more winter. Never seen it. In fact, usually I never see robins until there's no snow on the ground at all and it starts to warm up. That's really odd. These three brave, fat little robins. Yeah. And I sent you a story out today about this little girl that feeds the crows. And the crows started bringing her little gifts that only a crow would know what was good about it. But she feeds the crows, and the crows come back, and they leave a little gift in the seed trough, which is pretty cool. Shows you some, not just dogs and man, but we've got birds and man. Well, let's get going here. We got a little mix-up the other day, but we're back on track here. This is from one of our roving reporters that's been traveling all over Europe and down into the Middle East where they're not shooting. There are not too many places you can go in the Middle East that they're not shooting. But anyhow, he says that an eruption wiped out the Neanderthals does not fit with the Jews' push to say we interbred with the Neanderthals. The Jews have to promote this cover story or else admit Negroes are a separate species. This theory is never mentioned on TV, and I just stumbled onto it by accident today. According to 23andMe, which is some kind of a program, says I am 2.6% Neanderthal. It should be possible to tell the statistics, things like the common ancestry and so forth. Most likely humans and Neanderthals evolved from a common ancestor way, way back. This also leaves the Negroes high and dry, as they have no Neanderthal DNA apart from back migration later, thus proving that the Cro-Mags did not come from Africa. The Jews are now using the term European early modern humans now in their war against the Cro-Mags. Try to genocide even our ancestors. Soon to be homeless again in Sicily in the next day or two. Makes sense that the first human culture found in Italy and Greece, as it was always at its highest here for most of history. Fascism itself was the latest proof of our cutting-edge status. Dating the Eleusinian, wherever Cro-Mags first come from, we don't know yet. Could be Armenian Plateau, kind of an area which seems to have been important later on in the evolution of various haplogroups. and it is also one theory for the Aryan homeland. Studying the Armenians a bit at the moment, also as they seem to share ancient DNA with the Tuscans, quite hard to get samples to study of some of these populations. I'm considering heading to tour Greece and Albania. I'm not yet able to collect and test DNA samples here, so not much point in being in Italy, and should go somewhere cheap. I have lots of work to do studying the DNA and ancestry tests and trying to make sense of what data I have. Well, this young man is always traveling on the cheap, and he gives me a report every once in a while. He's been in Italy and Sicily for quite a while. But it's really valuable information he passes along. You know, I'm usually in the bunker from about 10 till, say, 1 o'clock. Then I was just thinking, I've got Skype here, and I can leave it on in case someone wants to call in with some positive information or something you want to talk about or any question you'd like to ask. So I'll leave it on, and I'm under Tom Metzger, or either that or T. dot or T. period Metzger, and you can give me a call and I'll try to answer it. Can't guarantee it, but I'm here. Now, I'm informed by my webmaster that the programs are up and ready for you to tune in 24 hours a day. Got a mental block, forgot the name of that, what it is, but anyhow, there's information up there on the website where you can tune into our radio show archives running 24/7, I believe, so try it and see if you have any luck. Every once in a while, Ronald Reagan comes up, turns my stomach every time I think of it. He and Ed Meese out in California developed this Operation Garden Plot, which was anti anybody who didn't go along with the system, a militant program of law enforcement. To experiment with it, to see how it worked, they used it on the Indians in Operation Wounded Knee. I know Robert Miles, my good friend, who's been gone now quite a while, he was in prison with the guy who was the head of that, and I'm trying to remember his name. Maybe I'll remember it later in the show. Also remember the dastardly deed of Reagan firing the whole PATCO Air Controllers Union, destroying them. He was an enemy of white working people, even though he took every advantage he could in Hollywood. He was also a liar. He said that he was overseas and he went to the so-called extermination camps. Of course, it turned out that he never did. In fact, he never left the country in World War II. He lived comfortably in a beautiful house there. I think it was in Beverly Hills. So Reagan was a consummate liar, like most of these people in power are. They're only upset when they get caught, like the newscaster that recently got caught. But most of them lie because they carry the psychology around that gets them to the top. And it's laced with devious crap. Also, on another subject, I think that the young man who, the veteran who shot up the super duper hired killer Marine that they made the movie about, I think he was suffering under depleted uranium poisoning, but evidently there was enough pressure put on the defense that it wasn't brought up. I could be wrong, but he was over there, I guess, at least once, maybe more times. And if you're over there in a battle area, you're going to be exposed to that stuff. And I'm quite inquisitive why the defense didn't bring it up, because he had the classic shows of that thing. I mean, you know, he had the classic actions, things he did were like that. Now they talk about PTS, but you don't hear him talking about depleted uranium poisoning. That still hasn't gotten the play that it needs to get. Whenever you see a soldier, he doesn't even have to go to the Middle East, because they're firing this stuff off with depleted uranium ammunition all over 29 Palms, California, Camp Pendleton, California, I'm sure. Here in Indiana, they've got lots of troops training down here. And they're probably being subjected to that poisoning from depleted uranium. And if you know someone who's having a son who's going to go train in those places, you better try to break his legs and get him out of there one way or another, because he could be dead, not from the gunfire of an Arab or somebody like that, or ISIS, but from our own military's handling of dangerous weapons. Military is up to its old tricks of supplying troops over there in the eastern Ukraine, or in the western Ukraine, with cluster bombs. Cluster bombs. These are very vicious bombs. They explode when they get near the ground, and then they throw out other little bombs all over the place, filled with, I guess, ball bearing type stuff. And then they'll sit there, and kids come along and pick them up. It blows their hands off. And that's what the U.S. is giving to western Ukraine, the Jew-controlled part of the Ukraine. Well, here's a question and a comment from one of our subscribers. I don't know if you ever saw Donnie Brasco, because this is just an example of how fucked up the government is. I saw the movie a couple of times over the week. I thought it was a very good movie, but the fact that this agent went undercover so he could get close to these mobsters only to use their secrets so he can put them all into prison. To me, you have to be a spineless piece of shit to do something like that. Even though these guys were so-called criminals, they took this undercover agent in like he was family, only to get screwed up the ass by this agent. I'm watching this and asking myself, how does this agent live with himself? Well, when you've been involved in this stuff as long as I have, you'll find out how they operate. And it really, in my estimation, it takes a totally moralist person to be an infiltrator, an informant, period. I mean, I agree with you. It's terrible. But they're great actors, men or women, and there are thousands of them out there. Or if they're not out there to begin with, they get arrested and the cops get something on them, and then they send them out to infiltrate and inform on someone else. That's why you have to be so careful all the time, eyes in the back of your head, watching everybody. This doesn't mean you have to make yourself sick worrying, but if you're not paranoid in this country by now, there's something wrong with you. And that's what somebody said. I just copied what they said. But even close friends, make sure you keep an eye on them. Listen to everything they say, because many times an informant that gets close to you is someone even in your own family sometimes. They got to be somebody you like. They got to have usually a nice personality and extremely loyal, and those are the kinds that get you. I've got the profiles on a whole bunch of them that have gone through my association over the decades. And believe me, they're They're coming off as wonderful people, loyal to the end. They even give you money, give you... Seymour was a cop in San Diego. He loaned us a big Winnebago to go all over the state. He set up parties for us, catered parties, all kinds of stuff. Loaned me radio equipment to use, on and on. And I know that a lot of them that infiltrated Aryan Nations got in through giving donations. You give a big donation. There was one guy up there who was a professional wrestler. I forgot his name. Had an Italian name. He donated the big sign that went on the front gate of the Aryan Nations church. And that put him on the inside where he could learn all kinds of stuff. When I was up there, and I know I was suspicious of him for some other reason, but he was hanging around the headquarters office all the time. And then something came up that he traveled to another town, come back saying he got stopped by the feds. They tried to ask him questions, but he didn't give them any questions. He was being debriefed because the Seymour cop from San Diego did the same thing when we had a get-together in San Bernardino or Fontana. He come back and said he got stopped because he was staying up there in a motel when we had a rally. And that was when it was the Klan had a cross-lighting. And he come back and said they stopped him, asked him all kinds of questions, showed him a bunch of names. But he didn't say anything. No, he was being debriefed. That's how they do it. They get somebody in, and then when they come out, they stop them and debrief them. And so there's a lot of ways that you can detect these people. If you're on the ball, it don't take you too long. But always remember, if you're in an organization, learn to pull files from the Superior Court. Pull the files on civil and criminal. Many times civil is more important because the way we detected the cop in San Diego was we pulled a file in a divorce proceeding with his wife, and she was demanding her share of his police pay. That was one of the easy ones. But what did we do? We didn't kick him right out. We kept him because the theory is it's better to have one you know in there than to kick him out and they'll send in two more. So we kept him around, but we never gave him pertinent information until finally he went nuts. He literally went nuts and ended up in the mental hospital. And interestingly enough, he didn't call his wife when he got put in there. He called me, wanting me to help him get out. Can you believe that? Yeah, these guys know I was a straight shooter. They think they could play on my sympathies once they get in a big mess. So that's just a little bit of my thinking about informants. But I will say this. I haven't had to do anything to any informant. I never planned to do anything to any informant. But karma seems to work because I've got a list of people that had some very, very bad luck after they tried to put a knife in my back. I don't know how that's come about, but I know it has. There's several cases that after they had tried to put a knife in my back, they ended up with very bad problems, including death. And I didn't do it. Yeah. And in case you're wondering, I never told anybody else to do it either. But just remember, for an informant to be successful, he's got to be liked by you. He's got to be pretty smart. He's got to carry out your orders. He's on the surface. He's very loyal and the whole bit. And so that's the kind that, that it works. Now, if you operate as a lone wolf, you won't have any of these kind of problems, because a lone wolf does not get chummy with everybody around town, other than just on a casual basis, you know, have a beer or something like that. But you don't let people come into your house. Especially people that you're suspicious of, or who may be involved in the same kind of racial politics you are. Don't bring them into your home. And don't bring any reporter, anybody like that, into your home. And keep the cops out unless they have a warrant, and there's nothing you can do about it. Always distrust cops. Always distrust the media. Reporters many times share all their information with the cops and the feds, so they surely can't be trusted. Recently, I did an interview with a gal from Indianapolis. I talked to her for a couple of hours. I hadn't done any interviews for a while. Oh, well, I'll give her an interview. She said, well, it's going to be printed pretty soon. Just a few days. I've been bugging her several times since. That's been about a month. And there's been no indication that article was ever printed. Now, either one or two things. That article was not what she wanted, because obviously we wanted it. She wants me to talk about things that the right wing talk about, and I didn't talk much about what things that the right wing talk about. Or she was searching out information for some kind of opposition group, or she was operating for the feds. And so I guess we're not going to know. Maybe we'll find out one of these days, but it just shows you that really giving interviews to a lot of these people is just a waste of time. They know what they want to write. They just want to have you say something to them so they can twist it around.
A $4 trillion budget blueprint that relies on tax increases to fund efforts in education, infrastructure, construction, and workforce development. Tax increases on these filthy, stinking corporations. As a matter of fact, I think I heard on NPR today that Obama is offering some kind of an amnesty, like the billions, if not trillions, of money that's being held offshore so these filthy, stinking corporations don't have to pay taxes, U.S. taxes. If they would bring the money home, these filthy, stinking corporations, there'd be a one-time 14% tax on these massive amounts of money being held offshore to prevent the very things needed in this country. Can you imagine? I mean, when you think about this, corporations that began here, that still have their roots here, it's one thing to move their operations and their jobs offshore, but isn't it something else again? Isn't it something filthy and stinking and criminal to leave the money offshore where it doesn't benefit the people in the homeland, if I can use that term, where these companies began? Nothing for education here, nothing for infrastructure, nothing to clean up the mess that these goddamn corporations left behind. I mean, again, I just have to keep asking the question, why do we, the American people, allow this to continue? Why? Because we're stupid, ignorant, neo-fascist, brain dead? What? There has to be a reason. Why do we not understand our situation the way the German people do? Or, to use a whole different approach, the way the Greeks do? Why does it feel that everybody in this country is so fixated on a Super Bowl game, or what's the one on Fox, American Idol, or whatever this crap is? And in the meantime, everything is going to hell. How many roads have collapsed in your city? How many bridges have gone down? How, I mean, it really doesn't matter anymore, does it? Anyway, back to Obama's budget.
Well, there he is, rogue progressive. Sorry about the distortion. I had a preamplifier go west on me, or go east, or go north, or something. I had to change it out. So that's the reason for the distortion. But I'm sure you can understand what he's saying about the goddamn corporations. Well, here's a little more from the rogue progressive on Nitwit, who's coming to this country. And it's the conservatives who are bringing him in, the alleged conservatives, which means nothing anymore. Conservative, that's a joke. So they want to bring this asshole in here to tell the Congress what he wants. Yeah, so listen to this.
Now, Iran. As you know, Benjamin Netanyahu is to address the U.S. Congress next week. He's going to tell the U.S. Congress exactly what they are supposed to do. And 90%, I've lowered my number count as to how many members of the House and Senate will stand up and cheer every time Netanyahu burps or farts. Let's say 90% of this assembled collection of halfwits that is the U.S. Congress will rise and applaud every time he burps or farts. But anyway, he's coming to tell them, at the invitation of John Boehner, the most incompetent Speaker of the U.S. House in this country's history, Netanyahu is coming to inject himself into U.S. foreign policy, and these halfwits in the U.S. Congress will hang on every word, and aside from the burps and farts, they will applaud him every time he advocates destruction and death, rather than cooperation and figuring out a way to get past what has developed into an issue, and it should not be, and that is Iran's development of nuclear power. Who tells us not to develop nuclear power? Who tells Israel not to develop nuclear power, or France, or Germany, or Japan, or China? Or go down the list. So yesterday, Monday, the U.S. and Iran reported progress on a deal that could sort of tamp down Iran's nuclear activities for at least 10 years and then slowly ease restrictions on programs that might be used to make atomic arms. On the other hand, they might not. According to the Associated Press, officials said there were still obstacles to overcome before this deadline, which is March 31st. And any deal is going to face opposition in both countries. Iran has its morons, its dribble-nosed religious freaks, just like we do. Just like we do. Only ours really believe that a Messiah is going to return if we nuke everybody on Earth. Jesus God. And any deal between the United States and Iran, and here's the kicker, of course, would be sure to further strain the already tense U.S. relations with Israel. Israel, whose leaders oppose any agreement that doesn't absolutely end Iran's nuclear programs, and the only way the Israelis would ever be happy that those programs had been ended would be to turn that country into glass. Because the Israelis know that they would never accept anybody on Earth's answer to any question that the Israeli government would ask that the Israeli government felt contained a threat to their existence. Now, there are historic reasons for that. But not to get too crass here, but it was not Iran that had death camps. Now, as expected, Netanyahu is going to strongly criticize the deal. in this address before Congress next week, even though he doesn't know the details. Well, he probably does. The Israelis have probably bugged every venue that the U.S. and Iran have been using to discuss this deal, plus the fact that I'm reasonably sure that John Kerry is probably reporting first to Netanyahu before he files a report with Obama about what is going on between the Iranians and him. You think that's too harsh? Come on. A comprehensive agreement could ease 35 years of enmity between the U.S. and Iran. Now, it's ironic because they are dating, the Associated Press dates that enmity from the time that the Iranian revolutionaries seized American hostages at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran. Why not go back to 1953? You see what I'm saying? When the CIA and MI6, whatever it was called back then, British intelligence, overthrew a legally elected government in Iran and replaced that government with the Shah, and then sat down with the CIA to establish SAVAK, the internal secret police that the Shah used to torture, murder, execute anyone who disagreed with his agreement with the U.S. and British oil companies. You know the history. But now, anytime I see any reference to this enmity between the U.S. and Iran, it starts 35 years ago with the seizure of the hostages. Oh, well. John Kerry said, as he said goodbye to members of the American delegation in Iran, he said, "We made progress." Okay. Now, more discussions between Iran and the six other nations that are engaging in these talks were set for next Monday. Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Zarif said all the parties involved found, his words, a better understanding, end quote, at the negotiating table. The core idea would be to reward Iran for good behavior over the last years of any agreement, gradually lifting constraints on its uranium enrichment program and slowly easing economic sanctions. Oh, don't you know that the Iranians are just so happy? They would be rewarded for good behavior. Who comes up with this language? Now, Iran has said repeatedly, how many times? It doesn't matter, but they said repeatedly it doesn't want nuclear weapons and needs to enrich uranium only for energy, medical, and scientific purposes. But the United States fears that Iran could re-engineer the program to produce the fissile core of a nuclear weapon. Woohoo! The U.S. fears that? Or Israel fears that? And has transferred that fear, if that's what it is, to the Americans. One variation of this deal being discussed, according to the Associated Press, would place at least a 10-year regime of strict controls on Iran's uranium enrichment. If Iran complied for 10 years, the restrictions would be gradually lifted over the next 5 years. One issue that critics are certain to focus on, obviously, is that, well, okay, once the deal expired, Iran could ramp up enrichment to whatever level it wanted. Well, at that point, you see, the Israelis would again threaten to nuke Iran. Madness. Madness. Experts say Iran already could produce the equivalent of one weapon's worth of enriched uranium with its present operating centrifuges. It has 10,000 of them. Several officials spoke of 6,500 centrifuges as a potential point of compromise. You know, if you will destroy 3,500 of your centrifuges and be a good little boy country, we will not bomb you, kill you, attack you, sanction you. Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei said last year that his country needed to increase its output equivalent to at least 190,000 centrifuges. Oh, boy, there's a difference, huh? Now, under a possible agreement, according to the Associated Press, Iran would also be forced to ship out most of the enriched uranium it produced, or change it to a form that would be difficult to convert to weapons use. It takes about 1 ton of low-enriched uranium to process into a nuclear weapon. An official said that Tehran could be restricted to an enriched stockpile of no more than about 700 pounds, lacking, obviously, 1,300 pounds of the stuff. Jesus God. Israel is already weighing in on the possibility of a deal come the end of March and a follow-up agreement in June. Israel, Defense Minister Moshe Ya'alon warned that such a deal would represent, quote, a great danger, end quote, to the Western world. And Ya'alon said, quote, it will allow Iran to become a nuclear threshold state. A nuclear threshold state. Well, the Middle East is already nuclearized, thanks to Israel, with its anywhere from 200 to 500 nuclear bombs. Iran could become a nuclear threshold state.
Well, got to turn that up a little bit. Immigration reform will take effect at the end of May. Now, guess what you got coming on this? The U.S. Department of Homeland Insecurity announced a major immigration reform on Tuesday, allowing spouses of individuals of the H-1B visa, known as the H-4 dependent spouses, to apply for work permits. The new rules announced by the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service Director Leon Rodriguez and will take effect on May 26 this year, according to the government release. Quote, allowing the spouses, wives and kids, of these visa holders to legally work in the United States makes perfect sense, unquote, Rodriguez said, adding that the move would incentivize highly skilled workers and their families to stay in the country long enough to acquire green cards. What about all those people that can fill those jobs that are out of work now, that are citizens and who fought in your fucking wars and everything? The reforms announced as part of President Barack Obama's executive actions on immigration were met with relief in countries like India, which sends a large number of workers into the U.S. tech industry while their spouses are unable to legally work. Oh, my God. Quote, I miss my job. I miss my financial independence, unquote, said software engineer Swapnil Gupta. I think half the people in India has got a name Gupta, who moved to the U.S. in 2011 with her husband, according to Reuters. Quote, I'm looking forward to getting back to what I love doing, unquote, she added, calling the new regulations a great relief. Now we're successful in putting more white workers out of work by doubling up on these people who have come in. Isn't that wonderful? Everybody likes that. Stand up and clap. Or what else? What else? Yeah. Yeah. Let's go. Let's go. is that foreboding ticking or just a waste of time? I think it's foreboding. Quote the raven, nevermore. When already? When already? Well, Brother Al Sharpton, the great one, has got a problem. Let's see what it is. This is from Black Media. Yvette Carnell. Al Sharpton's role in the Comcast debacle reminds us of why he needs to go. You mean black people don't like Sharpton? In this video, Yvette Carnell explains why the $20 billion lawsuit against Al Sharpton is yet another reminder that the black community needs to let him go. Sharpton was sued this week by Byron Allen and others who were concerned that Sharpton may have been bribed by Comcast to remain silent about the racial implications of the company's merge. Let's see what that's all about. In this video, Yvette Carnell explains why the $20 billion lawsuit against the great Al Sharpton, yet another reminder that the black community needs to let him go. You said that. Sharpton was sued. Yeah, we know that. Allen says that payouts to Sharpton, the NAACP, and the Urban League led to black media companies being left out of opportunity when the merger took place. As a result, black-owned companies received roughly 1/3,000th of the payouts from Comcast that they pay to white companies in licensing fees. Wow, that's interesting. Did Al cause all that? Let's see what Al's got to say here. Okay. I don't know.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Yvette Carnell from Breaking Brown in Your Black World. And if you have been following the news this week, if you have been following Breaking Brown this week, or if you have been following anyone else in black media this week, hopefully you are already aware of the shitstorm that is surrounding our boy Reverend Al Sharpton.
Oh,
now,
my.
You know, if you followed anything that I've said, anything that I've written, that insofar as I go, Al Sharpton is just a street preacher who's kind of gotten on and is kind of manipulating the black community and who serves as like the pit bull for the White House right now. But what I really want to break down right now is this $20 billion allegation against Al Sharpton by Byron Allen and other black-owned media people who are saying that basically, you know, Al Sharpton got on for cheap, for what Byron Allen describes as a chicken dinner. Al Sharpton got on for a chicken dinner payoff and boxed everyone else out. Now, what I really want to break down, like I really want to break this down and really go into why this is so important. Like, we really have to understand why these allegations are so important. And let me just throw something out, first of all. It doesn't matter what you think about Byron Allen. I don't know anything about the guy's politics. I'll just assume that given what he does, given that he's worth about $200 to $300 million, that the guy's pretty well off. He's a capitalist. He gave an interview with the Daily Caller. He's probably a conservative. I don't know. I can't call it. But the truth of the matter is, what we need to focus on right now isn't who Byron Allen is, because that's really a fallacy. That's an awful argument to go and attack Byron Allen and say, well, it's coming from this conservative guy. You know, you can't really trust him, or look who he's married to. You all have to stop that. The truth of the matter is, what really matters here is whether Byron Allen is right or whether Byron Allen is wrong. That is the key here. Now, let's look at what he says. In this $20 billion lawsuit against Comcast, Urban League, NAACP, it's against Al Sharpton, what he's saying is that these organizations have taken payoffs. And when you look at Sharpton, let's go all the way back. When Sharpton got his MSNBC gig, the National Association of Black Journalists went crazy because they were saying to themselves, and they were saying on their listserv, that this guy has no history in media. He doesn't know what he's doing, and there are plenty of black journalists who would have been better at that. So what happened? Well, the allegation came out that he was, you know, Al Sharpton blessed the Comcast merger, basically said, hey, hands off. I'm not going to say anything about what you do here as long as you give me the hookup in the way of a $750,000 a year MSNBC job. If you do that, I'll be quiet. I'll be the pit bull for the White House. I'll jump when you tell me to jump, and I'll say how high. So let's bring it to this $20 billion Byron Allen lawsuit, right? What Byron Allen is basically saying is that not only did Al Sharpton take a payoff, but he's not even good at taking payoffs. Byron Allen is worth $200 to $300 million, and what he's saying is that I can't even, Comcast won't even let me use their networks. They won't even let me have distribution through their channels. They have boxed me out, right? And what this also shows you is that Byron Allen, this guy who's worth $200 to $300 million, from what I saw online, has to sue to get a seat at the table. Now, the first point is that Al Sharpton has taken away his seat at the table for $750,000. So not only did you sell out, how cheap did you sell out for? $750,000, there are people who are in local media who get paid more than $750,000 a year. This guy, who is unqualified, or who, point two, probably took a seat away from a journalist who could have used it, who could have done a good job. And another point, that's a point that Byron Allen makes as well, is that this guy struggles with the teleprompter, and these are Byron Allen words, that every day, because of that, we all get treated at 6 o'clock to illiteracy. We get treated to a guy who kind of fumbles his way through because he got the hookup. So what you're looking at in terms of this race leader that we have in Al Sharpton is a guy not only who's a hustler, but who can't even play the game. He's not even good at the exchange. And the second point that Byron Allen makes is, what is the point of a race leader? Why do we have a race leader? Black people don't speak another language. Why do we have these people who stand for us and say, you know what, I represent black people. I am this person who represents black people, and I can interpret black people for you. I can tell you what they think and feel, and I can keep them at bay, which is basically the third point here, which is what Byron Allen accuses Obama and Sharpton of being. He says these two people are in cahoots. Obama's in cahoots because he basically uses Sharpton to kind of keep black people in place and do what he needs them to do. And Sharpton gets the hookup. He has a tax bill that, you know, I don't know what's happened to it. It just vanished. He has a nice job. He has a nice gig. He gets hookups from AT&T. He gets hookups from Comcast for a little or nothing. And that's what happened. So I think, you know, this whole thing brings into account the necessity of having a race leader. Because once you have a race leader in place, that person can sell you out. That's just the nature of having a person who is supposed to speak for the black race. And that's what comes down in this lawsuit. That's what you get from this Byron Allen lawsuit. This dude says basically that Comcast pays people, pays businesses that work on his network like $11 billion. White corporations, $11 billion that do business with Comcast and distribute through Comcast on their platform. Only $3 million goes to black owned media. $3 million. Now, this is happening while Al Sharpton is there. This is a travesty. This is only a portion of what, this is only a small fraction of what is paid. But what is Al Sharpton doing about it? And you have to ask yourself, why isn't Al Sharpton doing anything about it? You know, if this were another company that he wasn't getting paid by, you know Al Sharpton would be on the street screaming like he was crazy. But because he's getting a hookup for a little, as Byron Allen says, a little chicken dinner payout, he's good. He's fine because he's getting the hookup. This has never been about black people. This has never been about the welfare of black people where Al Sharpton is concerned. This is about Al Sharpton. This is about Al Sharpton being able to live out in wherever he lives with the Trader Joe's in the basement in Manhattan or wherever and go smoke cigars with people who work on Wall Street. This is what this is about. It's never been about you. And that's why he hasn't taken a stand against Comcast for basically blocking out black-owned media. And this is very important to me and people like me because I own a black media platform. I work for a black media platform. So I have to ask myself, what are people like Sharpton, you know, what are they really doing? And what does it really say about this mantra of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps? If Byron Allen, a black guy who's worth $200 to $300 million, has to sue Comcast to get a seat at the table, this guy's worth millions and he still can't get a seat at the table without filing a lawsuit. So I think in terms of the breakdown, we have to question four things, really. We have to question having racial spokespeople in the first place. What's the necessity of that? There's no white racial spokesperson. Why do we need one? I think you have to also question, even if you're going to have a racial spokesperson, or even if you're going to pick someone to speak for your community, You have to get someone who knows how to play the political game. You can't get someone who has no resume, who came up as a pseudo-activist in New York, as a sort of street preacher without a church. That doesn't bespeak a serious community. You're not a serious person. We're not a serious people if those are the people we choose to do our bidding. And I think it does call into context what I just into what I just said in terms of the do for self. In terms of, you know, this guy, he's worth all this money. He's this, you know, he's a hero to entrepreneurs, I'm sure. But look at him. Now he's just saying, you know, white people won't let me in. So all of these things come into account when we're thinking about Al Sharpton and why it's necessary to not only let him go, to not only say, hey, Al Sharpton, you know, as far as I'm concerned, he never should have had a time, but your time is up, and it's time for you to walk away. And when we get rid of Al Sharpton, the question then becomes, you know, when we get rid of these race explainers who are going to go by the wayside because they were really only there to prop up Obama, you know, these networks really didn't want them. When we get rid of these people, the question is, what happens next? What do we do next? Where do we go from here? So I think those are questions that we should consider going forward. And I think we should come up with some serious answers to those questions. And that today, that is my breakdown for today. And I want you to think about that, and I want you to talk to me about that. Facebook me at Yvette DC on Twitter, breakingbrown.com.
Well. I think Yvette's nailed the tail to the donkey here. And some pretty honest talk coming from the black race. I often wondered about Al Sharpton, how he could possibly get a job like that, because he's obviously incompetent, illiterate. When I debated him on the show in New York City years ago, I told him that. I said, you're a con man. He didn't like that too much. Anyhow, that's the story. It's all about money, as usual, and when people go for power, they go for corruption, and the more power they get, the more money they get, the more corrupt they get. Well, I got a mail letter here from another jailbird, old Dennis Mahon. Dear Tom, I hope all is going good for you and Mary. I have just received the visitation approval from my correctional counselor. The prison takes visits on Saturday, Sunday, and Mondays. Be sure to bring the enclosed visitation list to the prison to prove that you've been approved for visits. I hope Scutari is doing well. The other day I thought about Kathy Ainsworth and Tommy Terrence and how they were betrayed by the Judas Roberts brothers, leading to the martyrdom of Kathy and life in prison for Tommy Terrence. Well, Tommy Terrence did not do life in prison. He found Jesus and worked his way out and got out many years ago. Then he became a preacher of a church, I think down in North Carolina. And he never did anything again. As far as I know, there was no contact. But Kathy paid the price. Guerrilla warfare with the White Knights of Mississippi, guerrilla warfare, not terrorism. I guess the ADL paid the Roberts rats $5,000 or $6,000 so they could each buy new cars in 63 or 64. It disgusts me to no end to see how many morally degenerates there are among our race in the past 50 years. Oh, there's always been a big percentage of rats in the race, or any race. I'm reading the 98 book Ruby Ridge by Randy and Sarah Weaver. This is the second time I've read it, and it just tears me up inside to read of the evil visited on the Weaver family, Randy, and the rats Frank K. Plus, Gus Mancino, and Rico Valentino. Valentino is the one I told you about the other day that was a professional wrestler and joined up with Pastor Butler up at Aryan Nations. And he was sent there as an informant, visited the Aryan Nations Congress in 86, 87, 89. I went there those 3 years and probably crossed paths with Randy. But you're correct, the Butler's retreat was chock full of informants and agent provocateurs. Remember in December of 89 when you and I went to South Whidbey Island Park for the Bob Matthews Memorial Rally and you pegged Reverend Butler's security chief Rico Valentino as a government snitch? You were so correct. He left the rally several times during the 3-hour event. They always manage to do that, and it's a tip-off. They're going out to be debriefed. What's going on? Are they planning this or that? Do they have any weapons? That's always the method. Anyway, my chances for a retrial or a vacated reversal of my convictions are very slim, but I still must have hope. Oh, by the way, an unknown supporter named blah blah donated a much appreciated 25 Federal Reserve notes into my inmate account. May God or the gods bless him wherever he lives. Well, that's the 25 that we sent him. A good 100% cure of white liberalism integrationists is to put them into a general population in any state or federal maximum or medium security prison for a month or two. I guarantee they will hate these Negro animals and want to be as far away from them as possible and would never want them, their children, to go to school with them. They would be born again white separatists. Dennis Mahan. Yeah, Valentino. It's amazing. I'm no genius, but I was always able to pick out informants and infiltrators. Probably at least a dozen times, maybe more. There are certain things you look for, and certain things they look for, and certain things they do that they think you will like and embrace them. Yeah. It was sort of fun for me to watch new people come around and try to figure them out. Yeah. That's why lone wolf works the best. Yeah, you're an individual, you're a private contractor, you decide your own business, what you want to do or what you don't want to do. You can lay low or come out front, you can be public or private. You can operate in the political field, you can operate in other fields. So ever since I went to the Lone Wolf, I've had less and less problems. Except for that last deal where the ATF agents were helping me put my show together. Yeah, they was acting as cameramen for my Race and Reason show. And don't forget, we're streaming now, streaming the archives of the radio shows that go back for years and years and years, so you can listen to the radio shows all night long. Now, tomorrow I think I'll send you out on the show, a 20th anniversary gathering of the Robert Matthews murder. It's a speech I made at a gathering back in, I'll have to look on the paper, in the 80s sometime. 88, I think. Yeah. I'll have to check to make sure. Okie dokie. That's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Saturn's Day, 14:05, and shut up.
A gallon, America was young and strong and brave. Lord knows that I didn't have much money, and my old car. far had seen some better days. You were young and fresh as brand new roses. I was so in love and strong and brave. Back when gas was 30 cents a gallon and love was only 60 cents away.
Love was only 60 cents.